Mr. Secretary, nice to see you, sir.
Greta, it's good to be in your presence again.
You are in the President's cabinet. You are the Secretary of the Department of Energy. What is the Department of Energy?
Well, the average citizen would think about fossil fuels, they would think about renewables, they think about energy, and they'd be correct. But kind of understanding the history of the agency, it was created back in 77, the Carter administration, when we had gas lines and it came from the old Atomic Energy Commission. So you have all the nuclear weapons are under our purview. The modernization of the program that's going on right now, the national nuclear defense posture, all of that lies under the auspices of the Department of Energy. Some of the things that folks might not think about just the national labs. There's 17 national labs that do the most fascinating work in the world.
Like what does the lab do? What does a national lab do?
So we'll give you an example. In Oak Ridge resides the fastest supercomputer in the world. 5 of the 10 fastest supercomputers in the world belong to the Department of Energy. So we use them for a lot of different reasons. Obviously, criticality studies and being able to not do underground testing for our nuclear weapons. We're able to model those with our supercomputers. All of that makes a lot of sense. But the area that we found that our supercomputers are able to be of great assistance today, in an area that you would never give a thought, is in veterans' health, that in turn becomes healthcare across the board, dealing with post-traumatic stress, traumatic brain injury, suicide prevention. That's been stood up over the course of the last 18 months. A young Navy SEAL who I wanted some people who had actual experience out in the field with PTSD, traumatic brain injury, etc. And we're working in conjunction with the University of California, San Francisco, their Department of Neurosciences, a fabulous department out there, very well funded, and finding some good progress. Being able to take this massive amount of data that's out there, run it through our supercomputers to get answers to these questions that have really vexed us for a long time, non-traditional ways to deal with PTSD and traumatic brain injury. For concussions, for instance, and I'll quit with this, but whether it's an accident that's happened on a roadway or whether it's a young girl who's had a soccer injury, head injury, to know whether those kids have been concussed or not really can change their worlds in a positive way.
In your capacity as Secretary of Energy, I assume that you deal with other people in other countries that hold essentially the same post. Is that right?
I do. There's, you know, the G20, the 20 countries, and the G7. We all meet once a year. My colleague that's my counterpart in Saudi Arabia, Khalid Al-Falif, we've known each other for a long time. A 1982 graduate of the beloved Texas A&M University, my alma mater. So the largest oil-producing country in the world, the largest oil and gas-producing country in the world, the United States, both headed by Aggies. Just a little tidbit of information.
Well, while we're throwing tidbits in, you were the governor of a state that's known for oil and for energy production, Texas, big state.
Yeah.
Big, huge state. Tell me, when you look at energy policy, what's the relationship between, like, Department of Energy, energy policy, and, for instance, national security?
They are inextricably intertwined. When you think about 15 years ago, Greta, the United States was told we'd found all the oil and gas. Matter of fact, in the entire world, we'd found all the fossil fuels. We'd produced all of them. This was the decline curve, and there wasn't anything you could do about it. Even if you were able to find new reserves somewhere, the cost to produce them would be exorbitant. Well, innovation, and some of that innovation coming out of our national labs, I might add. Hydraulic fracturing, which was a private sector innovation working with some of our universities. The ability to keep the polycrystalline on the drilling bits, that was a national lab innovation. Those two together changed the world. Hydraulic fracturing, directional drilling, and today, the United States, that 15 years ago was relying upon other countries who might not have had our best interest in mind for our energy resources. Today, we're selling American LNG to 30 different countries on 5 continents. The geopolitics of the world basically upended by innovation, technology, and American know-how.
Is the United States energy independent? Can you say that?
Not completely, but we're awfully close. So I think the estimate is by 2019, late 2019, early 2020, we will be at that particular point in time.
To what extent, and we talked about national security, but to what extent as the United States becomes energy independent and now we have less demand from some of these energy producing nations, does that impact economies worldwide?
Well, it does. Not only does it impact economies, because energy is what drives a country's economic well-being. If you have access to energy, then you can develop various and sundry industries, for instance. Or if your country has a natural resource that you can use and to create a product, whether it's natural gas or whether it's one of the other fossil fuels, coal and what have you. Those are I'll give you a great example. India has this amazing potential. The United States is going to be helping them to reach that potential, partly because they're going to be a major user of our liquefied natural gas and our coal, and more importantly, from my perspective, our innovation. So American innovation, to be able to go over and to help them use our LNG, which is good for the environment. Clean coal.
Some might disagree that, there's a dispute on to what extent LNG is good for the environment versus coal.
Maybe we can come back and argue that some other time. From a practical standpoint, as the governor of the 12th largest economy in the world, I saw our emissions go down drastically from the transition from older inefficient power plants to natural gas. That is not a debatable issue. And I'm not talking about a little bit. I'm talking about 60% reduction of NOx, 50% reduction of SO2, and a 19% reduction in total carbon emissions. That's real stuff, and it can happen around the world.
All right, I interrupted you about India.
The potential for India, and say, for instance, CCU, the clean coal, the utilization, carbon capture utilization technology that we're developing at some of our national labs and the private sector working together, that innovation being sold and implemented in a country like China, they're going to create their energy. They're going to use coal. And for the benefit of the environment, seeing them use our technology that we know works, we got a plant down in Houston, Texas, that's taking 95%+ of the carbon out of the emissions. We're utilizing it as a secondary way to enhance oil recovery. But you can either sequester it or use it in this secondary way. So having that type of technology go to China and India, big use of good technology for the environment.
When you talk about China, China's got obviously a pollution problem. They want the LNG. And I read that China wanted to pay or contribute to the pipeline, the natural gas pipeline in Alaska, but in exchange, they also, if they're going to pay 75%, they want 75% of the LNG. You see China sort of moving into the United States and buying energy. Is that a good thing for the United States if they buy part of the infrastructure?
They've been doing that for a long time. This isn't a new phenomenon.
But is that good?
Listen, I happen to think that it is wise for us to have relations with as many people around the world as we can. We're not always going to agree with them 100%, but I do think it's wise for us to have conversations. Do we need to have oversight and make sure that they're not coming in and taking over major operating portions of pipelines or oil fields or what have you? Absolutely. But is it in the United States' best interest for China to have investments in the United States? Yes, just as I think it's in America's best interest to be able to go in and have investments in China.
I've been in Sudan and South Sudan, I've seen the influence of China in the oil fields there. Is that good for the United States?
Listen.
And is it good for Sudan and South Sudan?
They're a competitor. My position on this is we're not saying you have to buy everything from the United States, but we're also saying don't have a sole source. Nord Stream's a great example of it, the Russian gas coming into Germany. We're not for that because we don't want Russia to put the European theater into a position of not being able to have options on where they buy their LNG. We don't say we're the only ones. We're for the gas coming in from over in the Caspian Sea up through Italy, supplying the southern part of Europe. But whether you're in Africa, whether you're in Europe, the United States today is a competitor that can sell our LNG anywhere in the world competitively priced, and we just don't want that market to be blocked by China, by Russia, or anyone else.
What about batteries? You know, that seems to be a big area of innovation, or at least a need for innovation, because if you want to capture solar energy, you can't do it in the middle of the night, for instance.
Yeah.
Where are we in sort of changing batteries and improving storage?
The Department of Energy and our national labs are elbow deep in that.
Are we elbow deep in success or elbow deep in research?
We're having some very good successes, I will suggest to you. So we're not where we need to be yet. I tell people that is kind of the holy grail of energy production, is once we have the ability to store this energy that we can get from various and sundry ways, whether it's wind energy, whether it's solar energy, whether it's hydro, whether it's pumping it up in the daytime and letting it, and I'm talking about the hydro side of it, all of those are potential battery storage sources that can really change the way that we're doing business.
I assume other nations are trying to get to that race to who comes up with the best battery, or no?
Sure. Listen, competition is what makes the world go round.
But I'm curious, I mean, are we close to that? Because as you say, it's the holy grail. I mean, are we talking a year away from something really innovative, or 2 years, 10 years?
I don't
years?
Think I feel comfortable giving you a date certain that we're going to have battery storage, but I do think that let me switch gears on you just a minute and talk about fusion.
Nuclear fusion.
I'm incredibly excited about the concept of nuclear fusion, what we're seeing in the United States at a couple of different places.
We've been trying to do for years, for decades, decades.
And you know what? None of this is going to be easy, and it's but our national labs and the private sector, I might say. There's a company out in Irvine, California, TAE, that is doing some fascinating work on a prototype for fusion energy that, again,
close? Are we close?
By 2025, 2027, they're going to have a prototype ready. So in the grand scheme of things, I say that's pretty close.
Is nuclear fission, nuclear power plants, the United States doesn't seem to be very aggressive there. France, for instance, gets a lot of its energy from nuclear power plants. What is sort of the policy or the Trump administration program as to nuclear power?
The president is very pro-nuclear energy. What form is that going to be in? Again, I'm going to point to
fusion. Everyone's for. I mean, I think a lot of people are for.
Yeah, but in the classical fission energy side of things, small modular reactors. Bill Gates is working with the department. We just announced something here within the last few days of the Department of Energy and Gates with one of his projects to be able to work together. There's another company out there, NuScale, that's working on some small modular reactors. I happen to think, in a personal way, and I think in an administrative administration position as well, that these small modular reactors, there's some great potential for them, and they're U.S. technology, again, that has the ability to lead the world.
So what's the most exciting thing? As Secretary of Energy, what do you think, what is going to be sort of the biggest surprise that the world is going to see, Americans are going to see in the area of innovation and energy in the next 15 years?
It'll obviously be in the efficiencies, it'll be, and I think, an all of the above approach. So me personally, being able to bring energy to places that have never had it before is the great opportunity for us.
What about cyber threat to any of our sort of power, whether it's the power grid or any of our efforts to, you know, gather power?
Yeah, it's real, it's there. We have 10 years ago, we weren't thinking about this. 5 years ago, we were starting to see some issues with it. Now, we're having literally millions of pings a day and at our control panels around the world.
Which is not good, right? The pings. What do the pings mean? The pings mean...
Not good.
Not good. Pings mean not good.
But with that said, we have some of the best and the brightest in the world working on how you defend this, how you take care of it, what have you. So I'm quite satisfied that... the work that we're doing will be proficient both defensively and offensively to keep the lights on. And I worry more about a group of events that occur that are all related. A major natural disaster associated with a virus that's been laid on a control panel somewhere, and a physical attack. The three of those together could cause massive chaos in the United States. And so making sure that we have a broad array of energy sources. It's one of the reasons the Trump administration is saying, make sure we have coal plants, nuclear plants, our wind, our solar, our gas plants. All of those are essential to a broad web of energy sources that can drive these generators. We don't want to see the potential up in the Northeast where there's a big storm comes in, a polar vortex like we had, I think, in 2014, and restricted gas going into that area, shutting down nuclear plants, shutting down coal plants, and that could be a catastrophic event. The president wants to see these plants, particularly plants that have the ability to have their fuel on site, nuclear and coal, to be viable, to be out there, to be producing electricity for the citizens of this country.
Mr. Secretary, always nice to see you. It's been a while.
It has.
Nice to see you. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Thank you.